Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP and Caldwell. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Hey folks, I don't know what your relationship with money is, but I'll tell you what, my next guest is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, he knows so much. He calls it the efficient family office, and I have the great joy and privilege to be his publisher. But the moment Michael shared this concept with me, I was immediately hooked. So Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself and the efficient family office.
Yeah, thanks, Carrie. Great to be here with you. And you know, your great work you did. It was a pleasure to work with you.
Awesome.
I would say that the genesis of the book is on a few levels. One is that our industry is changing drastically. A lot of people think of innovation as cell phones and online shopping and everything. What the general person, the general public doesn't really recognize is that wealth management and finance has been equally impacted and impacted in a positive way. And so give me an example. When I came into this business just under 30 years ago, it took me a tremendous amount of time to do research, trading, portfolio reporting. That was really the job that the client hired you to do. Today, many that took our entire day are really done almost automated or instantaneously. And technology has done that for us.
Wow.
And so what the book has talked about is really, what are the implications of this, right? For what we were hired for two decades ago, today an advisor can do almost just by getting good at software.
Really?
So what has really happened is that the advisors that are at the top of their game have taken this advantage and not said, oh, that's mine. That's for my profitability. That's for my bottom line. The advisors of today who are really at the top of their game said, I now don't have to spend as much time on that task. Where else can I provide value? And so the book gets into a lot of that, and there's a lot more I could go into, but let me just take you back to, well, what does the name mean?
Yes.
What's the efficient family office mean? The term family office is something that you'll hear the ultra, ultra high net worth people use. And it really, I think, is the playbook or the model as to if you had an unlimited budget and could have your finances done any way you want, here's what you would do. Okay? And let me tell you what these people do and what that playbook looks like. You hire everyone or vast majority of your people in-house. So you have in-house investment people. You have in-house tax and legal advisors. You have in-house, a variety of other specialists. There also are things like concierge services and, you know, handling of properties and things, but that's way overboard. So the efficient family office looks and says, how might we be able to, for the successful person in the world, but not that level of wealth, how might we be able to learn from the clues that have been given to us by that playbook?
Oh, that's good.
When with an unlimited budget, you know what they would do. What might you do if you don't have an unlimited budget, but you want great advice? And so the efficient family office is sort of just, you know, a modification of what that level does. And part of our team and what I think it's not just about our team, but I've noticed we've done it one way and some of the really admirable firms that I look at and say, they're fantastic. If you're working with them, you're in great shape. What is it that those firms are doing? And I think the efficient family office describes that.
I love that. You know, I saw a post today on Instagram or something, the 24 largest billionaires on the planet, you know, and it had a little picture of them. And it said, you know, back in 1987, there were two on the Forbes list. And now today, they're just crushing it. And the common person, I'll put me in that category, I hear about that type of money. And it's mind bending. And you're saying that these people, the ultra, ultra wealthy, have these family offices. And you're saying, look, there's some clues that we can take from them. We don't need everything, but we can essentially tap into some of that. What would be examples? Like
that's a great, point. So again, knowing that much of your daily duties, if you've structured it properly, if you've gotten to know the technology that's available, which if you're good, you've done that, takes away so much of the mundane tasks of trading and other things. So now we can put our attention on some of the other things that really move the needle, such as planning, top level reporting. And what we really consider our secret sauce is collaboration of all of the areas of your wealth, sort of coordination of everything, which means, okay, I don't have $1 billion, but you know what? I've been successful. I have enough money that it's meaningful. I'm comfortable for retirement. And I need to consider things like the impact of my estate planning. Maybe there's taxes, tax issues. Maybe I have children that I want to make sure that if I'm able to pass along assets to them, that I do it in a responsible and thoughtful way, right? That I don't just sort of let assets just go out into the world and not think about it. Coordinating with tax advisors, right? So what we've done in this coordination and collaboration mindset is to say, we may not be a family office for you, but we have, for example, in-house an estate and tax attorney. Very few financial advisors can offer that. And so our clients get not only our, you know, investment oversight, financial planning, but they get this attorney that looks at their wills and their trusts and everything and just simply says, I'm not going to be your attorney, but as part of your financial team, here's some things to consider. And that's been incredibly valuable. We found so many landmines in clients, you know, documents just by looking at it, and clients would never have known otherwise. The other is just, you know, working with a tax accountant. If you gather data and use technology to your advantage, you can get information to and from the accountants much quicker. So the tax planning can be proactive and not reactive. Let me give
you an example. That's huge.
It's absolutely huge. Here's how most people work from a tax perspective between financial firms. The year ends.
Yep.
Okay, so 2024 ended. And sometime in 2025, 1099s, W-2s, K-1s all come in. Okay. And you give them all to the accountant. And most of the time, the accountant, you know what they can do with that information proactively? Nothing. Very little. You might be able to do something in a retirement plan because you can do that post year end.
Okay.
Most of the proactive things that you need to do are before the year ends. What we try to do is gathering information, gathering data, being tech savvy, is get ahead of the year end and say to the accountants, here's where we stand year end. Is there anything going on with the client we should know?
Wow.
Are we able to help from a tax perspective? And so if you think about, again, the framework of a family office, when that's all in-house, they're right next to each other. The offices just talk to each other and say, what are we doing for this family? When you're dealing with, unfortunately, a financial advisor who's over here, an accountant who's over there, an estate attorney who's over there, and they're all totally disconnected. In essence, the client's in the middle, and that's not what they're trained to do, right? Yeah. So they're not trained to be the coordinator. And so we say, and other great firms like ours say, the good firms need to be the coordinators. The financial advisors need to be the proactive collaborators between accountant, attorney, financial advisor. And that's
That's huge.
It's very important.
Yeah. I'm hearing proactive. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one of your tips, it sounds like, that the efficient family office means you are proactive, you're out in front versus reactive. And you just nailed it. I mean, I've had a variety of CPAs and a variety of wealth advisors, and the ones that are no longer with me are the ones that I felt like I was a number, and they were just trying to file a return, and there was no foresight. I mean, I like the people who are thinking for me and saying, you know, there's this new thing coming out, new law, and, you know, you're talking with my CPA and you're finding ways to save me money. And yeah. I mean, that's what you're saying.
Well, here's what happens in the world, Carrie, is that, and we see this a lot, great accountants, smart people, great attorneys, smart people, well-intentioned financial advisors. But as soon as the client leaves the estate attorney's office with a new will and a new power of attorney trusts, at that moment, the estate attorney, in a lot of respects, loses track of what's going on in that client's life. It's not their job to sort of keep daily tabs on them. So the balance sheet changes, their family dynamics change, their children have children, they're right, all of these things happen. So the estate attorney has no idea what's going on in their life. Their net worth could have tripled.
Wow.
It's not really, that's not, this is just one example. It's not the way that the estate attorney practices work. And these are great, smart estate attorneys. Their business is built on, you go to them, you update things. But by having sort of proactive connection between the financial situation and in our case, having an estate attorney in-house, that's just an example of, we now look and say, wait, Mr. and Mrs. Client, when you did your documents, your kids were very young.
Sure.
Now they're grown children, maybe having their own marriages. Your net worth is exponentially higher. What you did many years ago, albeit prudent, is outdated. And we're usually in a much better position to identify that than the average financial advisor who doesn't have the team or the firepower of knowledge that we've put together. Again, we're not completely alone in this. But unfortunately, the average client doesn't know the difference. One of the biggest frustrations in my business is that I talk to people all the time, and I know when I'm talking to someone and they tell me their situation, I know what the level of advice they're getting, right? Mm. And I know it's probably here, and their net worth justifies that they have should have this level of advice.
Wow.
And the truth is they just don't know the difference. So one of my motivations in writing the book, Carrie, is that when people get sort of or have success, they develop, again, what I'm talking financial success, there's a lot of types of success, but when they have financial success like this, and they're trying to figure out how to optimize it and how to really do what's best for their financial situation, the problem is they don't know what to look for. And so one of my frustrations is that the public, the general public, doesn't know the difference between an advisor who gives very thin and shallow and surface level advice and other advisors who really do things like the efficient family office. And so I really believe it's interesting. People then try to educate themselves on finance, right? And say, oh, I'm going to become an expert in this. I actually wrote the book because what I think people's best process should be is to actually educate themselves on how to pick an advisor. Educate themselves on what advisors could and should do today. And I think that's one of the biggest pieces that I think clients could get from the book is not, oh, well, this is going to teach me about the S&P 500. This is going to teach me about how to invest or something.
Yeah.
It's actually much more about this is how we should pick an advisor, because picking an advisor is the biggest and most important task that you can do. So, you know, that's really one of the premises for me of the book, which is if you know how to pick an advisor, then you know the differences. These people that don't know the difference are really lost in this sort of quagmire of uncertainty. And I do believe by the end of the book, clients will potential, you know, just in general, clients of ours, of other people, they'll know so much more about the advisory industry, the advisory sort of options, that they'll be better positioned to optimize how, you know, their situation.
Well, I jotted some notes here before we chatted. And one of those is that what are the questions that you should ask your current advisor or a new one? Because I think those questions are going to help you determine, like, I'm with the wrong one, or here's what I'm looking for. What should we be asking?
Yeah. So there's a multitude of questions. It's an entire chapter in the book, which I designed to be there and be helpful, because I think that the questions really dive into level of service, right? What exactly are you talking about? I joke sometimes that advisors, they're the CEO, CIO, CMO, COO. You know, they sort of portray to the client that they're the end all be all, that they do every role. And that's just not realistic. And so take, for example, our firm. I might serve in a lead advisor role, but we have multiple CFPs that are working alongside me with the clients.
Okay.
We have multiple CFAs, which again, the CFP is the planning designation. The CFA is the investment designation.
Okay.
And then we have our estate and tax attorney. So our clients sit in a room and have access to all of these different specialties, all of these different disciplines of knowledge. And so that's very critical, is one of the early questions is, who's my team? I often hear people say, well, I have a wonderful advisor and they probably are very good, But I do struggle sometimes with, well, wait, that's a single advisor with a secretary or assistant or something like that. How do you possibly think that that person with that structure is going to compete against the type of lineup that I just said sits at the table with the client? And again, I once again say we're not alone. There are others that do a fabulous job in the same way. So part of it, Carrie, is understanding the team. Who's doing what? What are their responsibilities? Yeah. Like, what's the real depth of knowledge? And then from that, I think it's so important that you understand what are the areas that you believe you can add value for me. You know, we take, I didn't even mention this, but we take tremendous pride in some of our reporting. Really, clients like simplicity. They like to know where they are at any given moment. They just want to know, they want things really simple and straightforward. And so it's one thing to say I'm a financial advisor and you get a statement and a performance report from me once in a while. It's another thing to say I've reached a point of sophistication and my financial advisor knows everything about my balance sheet. They know, you know, our houses, our this, our business interests, our life insurances, our wills, our trusts, absolutely everything, whether they manage it or not. And so we've built a really, really robust reporting platform that gives our clients really solid reporting in this area. So it just gets into some of these questions that really will help to uncover what are the services that they are providing to you, a current advisor, and what might be the potential. And then you just go deeper and deeper and deeper, even about business model and what's the cost structures and things, which again can vary greatly between firms. I think the biggest thing is that advisors are definitely not considered equal. They should not be considered equals.
Sure.
There are varying business models, you know, experience levels, services, et cetera. And there is a way to find exactly what you need if you know how to ask.
Well, I love that. I love that. Yeah. So I'm thinking that people are going to be watching this and a few thoughts are going on in their head. One might think, honestly, Michael, one might think, am I that important enough? That do I have that much value? Am I worth that much that I should even be thinking more than the single advisor? What would you say to that self-limiting belief?
Yeah, I think one of the most, I forget who said it, Albert Einstein or someone said, compounding is one of the most powerful forces in the world. And I think that people need to, one of the chapters in the book was about the magnitude of not optimizing sort of your financial picture. Is that you really shouldn't think of it as, oh, you know, I'm comfortable, but I'm not that big of a deal, or I am a big deal, so I can be, you know, I can be less efficient and less optimized. What I think, the way that I would think about that, if I were that person, is that fast forward and compound whatever level of wealth you're talking about and do it over a number of years. And you start to begin to realize that those are massive donations to charitable organizations that you can't make. Those are probably legacies that you can leave to family members that won't be the same. Those are second and third houses that maybe you've always dreamed of. You know, I like to quantify sort of inefficiencies more in that matter, because I think that starts to hit home with people that you're right. If I'm not getting great sort of collaborative tax and investment advice, even if it seems that big on a year-to-year basis, over time, that's just like a hole in the boat. And if I keep that hole sinking every year, that might be money that I can't give to my favorite cause. It might be money that I'm not able to give to or fund grandchildren's college educations, or I've always wanted that beach or mountain house, or, you know, I think if you realize what compounding does when you have inefficiencies, I do believe people will give that a second thought, because it is a natural thing. One thing is, do I have enough money to worry about it, or do I have enough money to not have to worry about it? And in either way, I can make a real argument to say, lose that thought, right? Let's get great advice. Let's make sure it's as good as it can be, because I think it's important. One thing, distinction about advice, Carrie, is that good advice doesn't mean predicting the future. Good advice doesn't mean crystal ball with what the stock market's going to do.
Sure.
I sit here today and I say, I have no idea what the stock market's going to do tomorrow. Right. And any good advisor will say the same thing. However, I also say that with our firm, we will report better, as good as anyone. We will coordinate with your estate and tax advisors as good as anyone.
Right.
And we'll make sure that your life feels as simple, as confident as possible. Mm. And that's really, that's success, right? And I can tell you that when you do that, that is when you will ensure that you are dealing in an optimized, most efficient manner. Again, I use that word optimized a lot.
Yeah.
It's not perfection. It's not, but it's not allowing sort of just good enough to be good enough.
Yeah.
Because if you can do better and you can do it in the right areas, why wouldn't you?
I love that. Listen, we got about 2 minutes left, but as we land the plane here, I love the subtitle, What You Should and Can Build, why you should and can build your own financial dream team like the world's wealthiest families. I caught it. The world's changed. No longer can a wealth advisor spend time, valuable time, doing what tech allows us to do fast. Yep. But the real differentiator between a efficient family office wealth advisor and the average person is that they're using their time to create more value for the client rather than just maintaining certain low level tasks. I mean, is that the book in a nutshell?
You nailed it. Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it is, Carrie, it's a quick read. You know, I sort of designed it to be a short airplane ride, 45 yeah. minutes to an yeah. hour. So it's not full of investment language and advanced right. lingo.
It's for the lay.
And that's on purpose. I wanted to be really user-friendly. But you nailed it. It really is. The world's changed. Great firms have changed. I think we've done a good job with it. There's many firms that I admire that I've seen mm. their work. And I think that it's a mindset of the financial advisory firm.
Yeah.
And it should be a mindset of the client. I think that's ultimately what it should be, is go find it. Go find the firms that are doing a really yeah. good job. Because if you're stuck in status quo, which is a lot of people, a lot of advisors, you are going to miss out on what could be available to you.
Folks, you can't afford not to get the book. Let me just say that again. There's a cost for not knowing this knowledge, and it has exponential compounding effect. So go ahead, invest in your future, invest in your legacy. Michael McDermott is here, and the Efficient Family Office. I'm going to put his website up one more time because I just think it's fantastic. You'll see that he is actually embodying exactly what we're talking about here. And right here is your beautiful team. And the website is literally, I want to have you pronounce that, because I want you to say exactly.
Yeah, Kathmir. It's
Kathmir. Yep. Yep.
It's a street Kathmir. I grew up on, Carrie.
Oh, I love it. Kathmir.com. On the website, you'll see even the Efficient Family Office. They have all different types of, I love it, man. This is so good. So thank you, Michael, for writing this book. I think that you've expanded my view today. You've given me questions to ask some of my team, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great. It's been it was a treat working with your team too.
You awesome.
Top notch. So thanks for having me on.
All right, folks, get the book today. We will talk to you very soon.
All right.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company Podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and caldwelllaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.